This is Studio 395, a production of the Department of History at James Madison University and its Historical Research Methods course, History 395. I'm Malachi Carter, a senior history major. It has been 65 years since the Supreme Court ruling in Brown versus Board of Education at Topeka. Since the decision, there has been people who question the effectiveness of the ruling, citing parents involved in community schools versus Seattle School District No. 1 and Stout versus Jefferson County Board of Education. In this podcast, we will take a look back in the past to see how the Brown versus Board case came to be in the importance of each part of the case. I'm speaking today with Everton Blackwood, a history major at James Madison University and author of the paper, Only One Can Lead History, How Brown Became Brown. All right, so I guess we'll go ahead and get started.
All right.
So in a sense, before this case, 65 years ago, the South was kind of split into two worlds. Can you kind of start by speaking a little bit on the segregation and kind of the conditions of that time period?
So segregation really much became a primary suit, pretty much a law in 1896 in the ruling of Plessy versus Ferguson, which pretty much gave the rights to the states to create laws that would become known as the Jim Crow laws. With this, they were able to legally separate the two communities, citing separate but equal. This would encompass everything in social life as well, but education was one of the prime suits. So one of the things that the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, goal was to eliminate segregation in schooling. Through their years, they worked with many different cases. They started off in higher education, trying to go find lawsuits that would help to end segregation in higher education. And eventually, they decided to go take it to the public and go after public schooling at the lower ages.
Can you speak, why did they make that change to go lower?
So they started off trying to pretty much go at higher education. They had a couple cases. Some of them I cited was Gaines versus Canada. I think I also had Eubanks versus Maryland, which are cases where they saw that there was a need for African Americans who wanted to go to these different schools, but the schools provided to them were not adequate. In the case of Eubanks versus Maryland, it was that Maryland did not have a school for African Americans to attend, and so they filed a lawsuit in which they complained about the condition. Seeing as Maryland didn't have the schools, they would give financial aid for the African American to attend schools that did have the means to do so. But the NAACP, they focused on the fact that this did not create a fair condition. This was not the separate but equal that was established in Plessy versus Ferguson. When they got to the Gaines versus Canada case, you see Gaines, who wants to attend the University of Missouri after graduating from Lincoln University. He wanted to attend law school, but Lincoln University didn't have a law school at the time. And so he filed a suit after he was denied admissions, even though he had everything needed to actually go into the school. He goes through the trial. Eventually, he goes missing. He kind of disappears and never to be seen again. This leads to Bluford versus the University of Missouri, where she tries to enter into the journalism school at the University of Missouri after hearing about the Gaines versus Canada case. She again tries to enter. She makes it pretty much all the way through the registration office, all the way up until the point where she's actually discovered to be African-American woman, where they deny her. And that kind of picked up where the Gaines versus Canada case left off. In doing so, she once again tries to integrate the University of Missouri, only to be I wouldn't say denied. It kind of laid the suit for the University of Missouri trying to actually integrate the school, seeing as they kept on seeing the financial matter that it put trying to go add on these additional schools at the Lincoln University.
So basically, it was like the financial burden placed on the state as a result of Plessy versus Ferguson years ago and the segregation laws.
Yes, because this is what leads to most of these schools, which would later become historically black colleges and universities, mm-hmm. to actually become. And when these students graduated from their school and wanted to seek higher education, Gaines wanted to go to law school. Mm-hmm. He didn't have that opportunity at Lincoln University. And so he kind of just tries to be an initiate of, why can't I go to this university if it has the schools that I actually need to become a lawyer?
Okay. Kind of transition a little bit. You speak about how the NAACP supports these four cases. Can you kind of explain why Brown versus Board is kind of recognized as the one that overturned segregation?
So Brown versus Board kind of becomes the lead case due to the fact that there's actually, I think, six cases in total. There's four in different states and then one in the District of Columbia. But in doing so, they kind of become each a prevalent case. There's many, and I want to go begin with the one that begins in South Carolina, which is Briggs versus Elliott, where there's this school district that doesn't have proper transportation for the schools, well, for the African-American schools at the time. Mm-hmm. And so one of the plans was for the school, for the NAACP on their new mission of trying to integrate public schools, was to bring this lawsuit. And when they brought the lawsuit to the district court, they found that there was substantial evidence that the separate but equal doctrine of the state law was being violated. But in doing so, they just ordered that the school district go find the means of paying so that the school would be up to grade and trying to put a time date on it. But what was funny was the fact that Julian Waring, one of the judges, he actually dissented from the rest, saying that this is not a means of doing so, like trying to go throw money at the problem when it solve it, and that if this continues so, that this would just be a continuation until it eventually becomes too much of a financial burden and the case does have to be heard again.
Okay. Yeah, so that's kind of what I wanted to talk about next with the judge, Julius Waring. Can you speak a little bit on the difference between this case in which he kind of agreed or disagreed with other judges and on the case of ending segregation versus that psychological argument that the Brown case offered?
So in Julius Waring's dissent, he kind of foreshadows what would become a before and after, where so you have these schools where they are not properly conditioned, and so you have people bringing lawsuits, some just trying to go get transportation for their children to go to these schools. And he sees that this is just becoming another matter, just like in the higher education realm where the cases are just, we'll just throw money at it, we'll build these new schools so that they'll be up to condition. But he cites a couple of cases, some being Gaines versus Canada and Sweat versus Painter. In these cases, it has been acknowledged that any of these cases could have actually overturned segregation in education, but it wasn't seen so. As the other judges dissented, the other judges who ruled on the decision said that these cases didn't really relate to the problem, as college is a voluntary thing where you actually choose to go enter into a college or university versus in public school where you are kind of mandated to go to the schools. versus psychological in Brown versus Board, this was the first time that this allowed for the omissions of psychological effects being brought into the case, which became one of the focus points. Thurgood Marshall, during the actual Briggs case, he kind of tried to use this doll test, and the doll test pretty much was outlined to say that the segregation had left a psychological scar on African Americans being done by Mr. Clark and his wife, where they kind of just did a test of African Americans and they asked them to pick out like dolls.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the children would go pick out the lighter skin white dolls versus the darker skin dolls. And when they asked exactly why the African American children would just list qualities with the white doll as being positive versus the darker dolls having more negative characteristics.
Yeah. Okay. All right, I have just one more question before I think we run out of time. Can you just kind of talk about the lack of accountability on the part of a lot of the judges outside of Judge Waring, and like just their how they kind of fear change and then kind of pushed off like the different cases to each other or to the Supreme Court and Congress, and just that failure to fully accept accountability?
So what came so was in each of these cases, a lot of them would cite the Supreme Court Plessy versus Ferguson. That would be a lot of the defense of the defense attorneys. And doing so, the court judges would usually side with that being so because of the fact that the Supreme Court having the highest ruling. And the high courts, the Supreme Court being, there were many cases, as mentioned, cases dealing with higher education in the college level. There was many times where the Supreme Court kind of just, you know, made a ruling, but some viewed it as a necessary thing for Congress to be the one to go enact a law that would affect the actual whole country versus the Supreme Court making a ruling. One of the books that I actually read was about the remarks of Robert H. Jackson, mm-hmm. and how he just wanted the Congress to actually be the ones to make the ruling and make these laws as he viewed it as a congressional matter versus something that the Supreme Court decided. But eventually, when the Brown case reaches the Supreme Court, he kind of sees that Congress is not going to be the ones to handle this problem, so they have to. And when doing so, they need to make it an airtight ruling where there isn't any loopholes, which Earl Warren, mm-hmm. he kind of actually makes a lot of loopholes in his opinion on the matter. Had Robert H. Jackson been able to, you know, make his own little, opinion
yeah.
on the case, it would have been more airtight and less controversy with the rulings.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, well, thank you for listening to Studio 395. More interviews on a wide range of historical topics and subscriptions to our podcast are available on our show page at sites.lib.jmu.edu/Studio395. To learn about the history major at James Madison University, please visit www.jmu.edu/history.